Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick Control Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, we are potting for our coaching jobs.
Gotta hope not.
Yeah, actually, that would be a horrible idea.
Not gonna work out well for us. So after I went on two different radio stations yesterday and was asked point blank, is Frank Vogel coaching for his job? And I said, well, the indications are that he's not. That's what's been said. There's been no indication that he is coaching for his job. It seems like Bird is more likely to blame the roster.
Right.
And then ESPN.com's Mark Stein comes out this morning and is like, no, not so much. Actually, he's very much coaching for his job.
Yeah, that's I don't know. It's reactionary, and it seems like maybe that's just lip service to kind of quell the storm from onlookers, but it wouldn't shock me. Good coaches get fired all the time. I immediately got excited because I thought, oh, God, I never thought Rick Adelman was going to coach the Wolves. What if Frank Vogel coached the Wolves? So selfishly, I got very excited about this news, but, you know, for unrealistic expectations. But, I look at that team, and maybe this is a problem with Vogel, but I watched the team the last two games, and we'll talk about the game in a bit. But last night, like, I watched it, and I was like, all right, they're relying a lot through different stretches for Lance Stephenson and Evan Turner to make plays. And not that Lance – I mean, we praised Lance Stephenson all season long. I think either you and I or maybe at least at some point we thought he was playing like an all-star. I mean, it's not that he's a bad player. It's just there's only so much he should be unleashed on a basketball court, right? And I think that if you're playing with that kind of – like you need playmaking from him, it's – I think it's similar to the Wolves needing playmaking from J.J. Barea. It's great when it's good, but when it's bad, like, you need to pull back. And Evan Turner just doesn't look comfortable since joining that team, and maybe that's just simply it's hard to pick up everything in a short amount of time like that. They don't practice a whole lot. So, you know, not that he's played poor. Well, I mean, he hasn't been good, so he has played poorly. But I just look at that and I'm like, you've got two very big variables there. Like, and I think that that's hard to win with when you need offense.
He also could be struggling because Lance Stephenson tried to kill him. So
that's a possibility.
Man, I don't like I do tend to do this whole I buy into patterns just because it's just kind of the way that my brain works. I understand these are individuals. So it's not really like that, but explosive, really hyper emotional young guard wing from New York starts getting into fights with teammates and has a severe attitude problem. They can't play the Pistons at any point. They need to cancel all Pacers Pistons games if Lance Stephenson keeps this up.
I think it's I just think I can't believe Deion Waiters made Lance Stephenson punch Evan Turner.
Right. And now Stein also reported that this is the second one that Stevenson's been in where he had to be separated from George Hill as well.
Well, luckily, you know right now that neither of them can hit anything.
Again, I got to ask, David West needs to kick some ass.
I guess my question is was Danny Granger that big of an influence? And it wouldn't shock me if he is, but it always seemed like David West was the leader, right? And then they tried to, like, make Roy Hibbert the leader, and they tried to make Paul George the leader. But David West seemed to always be the guy that they took their lead from. But what if Granger was just that voice off to the side, even though he wasn't playing, like, keeping everyone together, keeping everyone calm? I guess I don't know enough about the situation, but it's fallen apart since that happened. Also, since they took that horrific boy band picture.
It's true. That's really was a turning point, I think.
Was it the picture or Danny Granger?
The picture. Okay. No, the picture was definitely the impact. Well, it's weird because there's been a lot of dueling narratives on this because they traded Granger and everybody's like, Evan Turner sucks. He's the worst. How could you trade for him? He's awful. And I kept being like, y'all seen Danny Granger? Have y'all?
Right. I mean, he's been fantastic in the short amount of minutes he's gotten for the Clippers, but that's also like, that's just a weird role. Like, you don't know that would have happened anywhere, and you don't know that he could even move right now. Like, he's not a guy you can rely on.
Yeah. And so taking that – and I just – it's hard to imagine that – and again, and somebody else – other people have said this. If moving Danny Granger with his 4 points per game was really going to be the thing that completely unraveled your team, you were in bad shape to begin with.
Certainly.
Like, I mean, a lot of it – I get a lot of it because, like, Paul George is still learning. Like, he's still so young. And so he's learning what to do. I have been really disappointed with Roy Hibbert, who I love as an individual. He's always been really cool to talk to. I think he's got a good personality. I've defended his game because people want to focus on rebounding when they're the second best rebounding team in the league, all of this stuff. But I don't mind him calling out Lance for the selfish dudes thing. Well, that's fine. Yeah. They're basically, it seems, the more that the pattern's coming out, they're trying to get Stevenson to knock it off. Like, everyone's trying to get him to chill out. I am not trying to single Lance out, but it's a lot of the stuff keeps spinning that direction.
Right, and when you have a volatile situation, which that team clearly is right now, if you have, you know, reports about the coach being on the line and all these guys sniping at each other, reports of fights, if you have a volatile situation and a young, volatile guy in that situation, very, you know, not maybe not centralized, but very close to the center, he's very close to the eye of the storm, like that. There is a recipe for disaster there. It doesn't mean that it's going to blow up, but it kind of is, right? Like, there's a very high likelihood.
And then for Hibbert, I think that he's got to stop thinking about what he needs. And it's been really surprising because he's never seemed like this type of guy.
Yeah.
For years, he just kind of, like, he got paid. He's not working for contract. He's got the money. But for whatever reason, and the same weird thing's going on with Dwight, where it's like, oh no, I need to get mine in the post so that people will stop saying mean things about me. And it's like, just go kill everyone. If you play defense, get putbacks, and are generally big, and you're causing mayhem, like, being big shouldn't be hard for you. You are naturally big.
Job description, be generally big.
Be generally big. You know, that's going to make more of an impact. He's wasting energy trying to get positioned in the low block when the Hawks know what he's trying to do and can shut him off. And he's missing, like, honestly, there were three shots last night he took that I was like, I have no understanding of the physics involved and how this shot did not go in.
Yeah. I've got multiple thoughts on this whole Roy Hibbert thing. One, I like that he was aggressive last night early on. I mean, I think, you know, he started 1-5. I think he was 1-7. So he didn't play well, but, you know, he tried to dunk on somebody at some point and missed the dunk. Like, I think with him, you need quick, aggressive moves, right? Like, that's when he's at his most effective. And so if you can try to get him going early, I like that. If it's not working, go away from it. Two, I wonder if what you say is, like, you know, he was never that type of guy to really, like, demand stuff or worry about what he needed, and now he has. I do think a lot of that is expectation and feeling pressure through expectation, and that could, you know, change his personality a little bit or what he feels he needs to do on the court. And I, you know, that if that was the reason, it wouldn't shock me. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I think you just have to come to grips with, as long as we win as a team, and like you were talking about with Dwight, like, yeah, you want to have an impact. You want to be the guy. You want to, you know, dominate in the post because people say you can't dominate in the post. Like, you want to do all that stuff. But if you win, like, think about Chris Bosh over the last few years. Chris Bosh was a guy, oh, he doesn't rebound, he doesn't score, he can't score on the block, he can't play defense, he can't block shots, he's not doing this, he's not doing that. And he didn't go out and say, I've got to do this, I've got to do that. He would talk about when he needed to play better, but he wasn't really demanding touches consistently, right? Or calling out teammates for not getting him the ball. He kind of just fit into his role and figured out what the best area for him was. And at a certain point, like, that team just kept winning, and they won titles, and nobody cares what Chris Bosh does anymore. There will be a few guys, you know, here, if he has a bad game in the playoffs here and there, they're going to say, oh, see, Chris Bosh, he's a woman, he can't play, he's soft. But ultimately, dude's a two-time champion. He's the, you know, literally the centerpiece of that defense for huge stretches of championship runs. Like, that guy, nobody cares what he does anymore because they won. And I think that there's a certain point where with Hibbert and Howard, like, just do what you're supposed to do and go win. And I know it's not that simple, but it kind of is.
And it's weird because there's all this storm about them in the today because reporters obviously smelled blood in the water and started finally getting through and getting stuff. But then, like, third quarter, they hit him with the haymaker of doom. It was over.
And that's what they do, right? Like, when they're good, that's what they do. They went 31-13 in that third quarter and just dominated. And it was like, oh, right, the Pacers.
Like, George Hill was like, all right, Teague, if you're going to go over the screen, you're going to beat me, but I'm playing you all the way to the other end.
Yeah.
You're not doing this. And then they ran some man zone type stuff where basically they were – I mean, the best way to describe it is they played man. They just helped off extremely hard.
Yeah.
But they kept within range to basically, it's like, as long as Antich has a hand in his face, he's not going to hit. He probably, like, he won't shoot that badly next game, but he's also not going to shoot 60% from three,
yeah,
which is all you need.
Right, yeah, exactly. And at a certain point, and I'll bleep this out, you just need to play some defense. Right. Like, that's what you need to do. And that's what they did. And that was fun. And I mean, not fun for the Hawks, but that was like, oh my God, we can see the Pacers again. They look like a team. And I don't know if it's going to last. I don't know if that will be the turning point for them, but it was at least good to see them in their element. Roy Hibbert ran down the court from the bench to celebrate that buzzer beater. Like, you could see them having fun again. And that was, you know, whether you like the Pacers or not, like, that makes for better basketball.
That was, I do wonder if that was, we've seen three games where the home team just killed the other team that had taken the first game.
Yeah.
And the question is whether or not it was, no, they got it right. They got pissed. This is a series. Like, they've got their heads on straight. They've realized it's the playoffs. Or if it was, we got the split. That's fine. Like, yeah. That's, I don't think anybody takes games off, but your mental approach is different when you're like, okay, well, this is hard and this sucks.
Yeah,
but
you steal that first game on the road and you think, all right, we've got home court advantage, like, we can relax a little bit. And maybe you shouldn't, but that is a natural inclination of, like, just anybody with their job. If you get a tough thing accomplished early on, you are likely to just kind of like, all right, I'm going to relax a little bit. I don't have to worry about that anymore. Like, that's just kind of a human thing now, right?
If the Hawks keep bombing from three, because that was the other thing, is that they actually didn't get that many threes up last night. That they had a ton in the first quarter, in the first half, and I wrote about it. Was like, if they keep doing this, I don't know what they can do. And it was good to see, because basically Indiana started doing what everyone talks about. Well, Indiana's so good in the paint. Indiana's so good in the paint. You know what Indiana's great at? They don't let you shoot threes.
Yeah, they don't let you, and you typically don't. I mean, the Hawks have been an outlier with this, but they typically don't let you hit threes either. Like, you don't take them and you don't make them.
And limiting attempts is just as important, because it puts more pressure on you when you get that, because then you're rushing threes when you get one.
Yeah, you're rushing threes and you're getting run off the line to take long twos because of the shot clock. Like, there's just an overall cumulative effect.
And so that was like a really big part of it, you know, and going forward. But I do have here. You want to? This is what the Vogel situation reminds me of if he gets fired. Rick Carlisle.
Ooh, good call.
Remember? Yeah, spent one with the Pistons. They didn't go far enough. Got fired. Ended up with the Pacers. Not his fault. What happened?
No, I mean, I guess he should have known to sub Ron Artest out and put him in a straight jacket. But we all have different coaching strategies.
Ooh,
that's a really good call.
And then winds up going to Dallas and is widely regarded, though he didn't get any COI votes, like, widely regarded as the maybe third best, just because everyone loves Tibbs. Probably if you were to do an overall rankings, it would go Pop and then Tibbs, maybe Rivers, and then Carlisle's definitely top five.
And now, you know, Frank Vogel goes to the Timberwolves and turns them into a title contender. I think that's clearly what's going to happen.
You seem a bit more excited about this idea than Flip Saunders.
Just a little bit. Just a guy who's coached successfully in the last few years. That's what I want. Can I add this to this entire Pacers conversation? And granted, some of this is, I'm trying to keep as much bias out as I can and put this into relative, like, basketball terms and basketball ideologies, because I do like Roy Hibbert. I think that he's, you know, I'm with you. Like, I love his personality. I've only had good interactions with him. Full disclosure, like, I like Roy Hibbert. I like him as a person. I think he's a good player. I wrote last night, I think he's good. I think he's not good in this series, because it's a weird matchup. But we've got to stop freaking out when Kyle Korver comes from the weak side and blocks him. That's just basketball. Like, I get he's 7 inches taller than Kyle Korver, but it's not like he's going up for a dunk, like, pointing at Kyle Korver saying, I'm going to dunk on you, and going up for it, and Kyle Korver's rejecting him. Like, none of these are straight up. These are all help plays, and he's not getting good position and good balance, and it's allowing it to happen. But we seem to, like, be like, oh my God, Kyle Korver blocked Roy Hibbert. It's like, right, Kyle Korver is a pretty good help defender. Roy Hibbert is not a strong scorer. Like, that's going to happen. It's not like it's a mano-a-mano challenge.
It's also like, it's kind of like if Nate Robinson blocked Glenn Davis.
Right.
If you adjust for size. Because it's like, well, Nate Robinson's much shorter than Glenn Davis. Yes, but Glenn Davis doesn't jump.
Right, exactly. That's the thing. Nate Robinson blocked Yao Ming once, right? Or maybe a couple of times. And everyone freaked out. It's like, well, you have a super good athlete. Not that Kyle Korver is that, but you have a super good athlete and you have a guy that doesn't jump.
Yeah. And Hibbert, that's really, and I've gone back and forth on this, because, like, I've actually, and this kind of shows how sick I am. I go back and I watch some of his attempts underneath that wind up getting blocked, like a couple of times in that first game, where he gets the offensive rebound and a lot, like if it's Dwight Howard, he's hammering it down. Like he's either hammering it down or they're going to have to foul him into oblivion. They have to wrap him up in order to stop him because Dwight's just going to just dunk everywhere. And Hibbert doesn't get low enough to explode up. Like he doesn't. I don't know that he's physically able to explode up like that.
Yeah, I don't think he has a legs work up. Yeah, I don't think his body works that way. I mean, clearly it doesn't work in the same way as Dwight Howard's, but I think like he is so awkwardly tall, and you got to think like he's got like 4 inches on Dwight Howard, which matters. He's so awkwardly tall. Like I think balance. He falls down all the time. Like I think balance is really hard for him, and you need balance to be able to explode and dunk on somebody. With that said, he's playing like crap on offense, but I just like the block shots and people start freaking out about it on Twitter. I'm like, I don't know. That looks like basketball to me.
It's just really weird to me. I guess people could say, then why do you harp all the time on the New York Knicks? Like J.R. Smith begs for me to harp on him. Like he wears a sign that says, please.
It's like J.R. Smith's hired you to be his dominatrix. Please nobody make a Photoshop of that. Nobody do it.
What have you done? What have you done? But like the Pacers, like Roy Hibbert's he's never talked, he's never run his mouth about Miami. I know Heat fans hate him because he plays well against them, but that's a crappy reason to basically denigrate a player. Like this is something that's been an evolving thing, and it's a common thing. Like you want to like disrespect the guys that give your team struggles because it's a rivalry, but I don't know. Like the Clippers have a rivalry with the Clippers, or the Grizzlies have a rivalry with the Clippers. I want to talk about how good the Clippers are because then the Grizzlies are better than a team that's really good.
Yeah, wouldn't you want your toughest rivals to be tough rivals and then you win and it's like, that's how good we are? I mean, I guess there's a certain like bravado to like, oh, nobody can touch us. We're the best. Nobody. But I don't know. I kind of want a good challenge. Like I used to hate the hell out of Tim Duncan. I respected him. I knew he was like the best player in the league or one of the best players in the league. But there was like a KG Duncan rivalry, and I was a KG guy, and I hated him. But I couldn't like I wouldn't say like, oh no, he sucks. KG's so much better. Like no, he's clearly better.
You know what does suck?
Hmm.
The Bulls' defense in the series.
Good God.
Bulls fans are living with me, and I'm not doing much to dissuade that. I'll own up to this one. Well, it's really weird because here's what it comes down to. I have no problem with Noah winning DPOY. I wouldn't have voted for him, but I also don't have a vote. So probably maybe it's a good thing I don't have a vote since I wouldn't have voted for the guy who won, who everyone thinks is. I think Noah definitely deserved. I said that he wasn't. Initially, I made a comment on Twitter about like I may not have had him top three because I was thinking Ibaka, Hibbert, Iguodala, but I was like, no, Noah's definitely like two. Like Hibbert's fallen off too much, and Iguodala didn't play enough this year to warrant it. So like Noah's definitely two. I happen to think Ibaka was better, but that's like a really quibbly thing. Like I've got no problem with it. My issue was simply that I don't know, but talking to a lot of the guys that have votes and reading a lot of the work of the guys that have votes, they just like the story, and I get that, and that's cool. But it, and I guess here's the thing. It's not even invalid. It just annoys me personally. So,
I was on I don't know what is that Spreecast thing that Ethan does on like True Hoop TV Live or something, and I was on there talking to Tom Haverstraw, and we were talking Defensive Player of the Year, and this was a month ago, and he asked me who I thought would win and why, and I said Joakim Noah, and I do, and I put it down in our awards. I think Joakim Noah is the Defensive Player of the Year. Like if I had a vote, he would have been my number one. I think he's been the best defender. He's on the second best defense. Like he's if you want to make an argument that Taj Gibson is as important or more important, I get that. I don't think he's a runaway, but he would have been my pick. But I really thought like we're so narrative driven. People love this Bulls culture for, you know, because they love Thibodeau and they don't quit and all that stuff. And it's everything. It's all the narratives we love about sports. And whether it's valid or not, that's going to come through. But I thought he won it during the national televised game, the moment he defended LeBron and they cut to his dad and his dad's freaking out and then he's freaking out. Like and that's what I said. I was like, that's the moment he won voters over.
I want to mention, by the way, Joakim Noah is a fan of legalizing marijuana, being absolutely insane on the court, talking trash to your teammates, clapping at people, big blocks and screaming loudly. I love Joakim Noah. He speaks to me in profound ways.
He's one of those guys where I feel like you want to hate him, but they, like, he's I don't know how you could honestly hate him. I know Celtics fans hate him because of, like, the, you know, the rivalry. I know Miami fans hate him because he hates Miami and all that stuff. But, like, looking at that guy, you would love for that guy to be on your team. He is, like, the ultimate competitor that you want on your team as the quirky, like, star role player, right? Like, that guy, you want, like, if he was on the Timberwolves, I would love, like, he'd be my favorite guy. He's like a good Roni Turioff.
Yeah.
Like, he's so much fun.
He's a little, and this may just be because I'm such a bias towards the guy I'm comparing him to, but there's a little Zoe there.
There is a little, oh, that's a good call. There is a little Zoe.
There's a little Zoe there. That said, I've been looking at the numbers and just like staring at them every now and again in one of the tabs. He's got a 110 defensive rating in two games versus the Wizards.
Ooh, yeah. I mean, I think he's played well, but they're not stopping the Wizards right now. Whether he's on the court or not, and it's
yeah, I'm not arguing like, oh no, Joakim Noah is the weak link on this defense.
Right.
No. It's just really weird that, and I want to talk about this with you. This series more than any other to me is it speaks to something that which coaches know and players know that the media doesn't talk about enough, and it's that how you perform on offense feeds into how you can defend, and how you defend feeds into how you can run your offense.
Yep, absolutely.
And that's what we're seeing a lot in the series, because the Bulls are missing everything and the Wizards are pushing and getting into sets and getting them off kilter, and they're spending so much energy on the offensive end trying to make the little round thing go in the circle with the net attached that they look gassed a lot of the time.
Yeah, and you look at it too, it feels like I mean, this Bulls team just can't put the ball in the basket. Like, they're just a very bad, bad, bad offensive team. And, you know, DJ Augustine had a great run last night. Taj Gibson has been solid on offense. Noah was good on offense last night. But there's so many long jumpers. And if you get a long jumper that misses and you get a long rebound, and that rebound goes to John Wall or makes its way quickly to John Wall after the rebound – like, what do? You can't, like, you just physically cannot change momentum that quickly. Somehow John Wall does it. But he's, like, one of the eight humans on the planet that can do that. His ability to push the ball, Bradley Beal's really good at pushing the ball. Like, those guys, they get on top of you the other way so quickly that it's screwing up this Bulls defense.
The other thing is that their pick and roll coverage is made to defend humans, which John Wall is not, because he's throwing around that screen and they're used to like, oh, if I take two steps, I've got him covered. And Wall's like, no, I'm a million miles long. I'm already around you.
Yeah.
Like it's jacking with them so badly. And today's been fantastic. He's come up with huge shot after huge shot.
I thought Ariza was great last night.
Ariza was fantastic. Their length has given the Bulls nightmares.
Yeah.
Like they're used to being able to beat you either off of the drive or with strength, and the Wizards just have containment in so many places.
It's got to be a little concerning for the Bulls that Trevor Ariza has outplayed Jimmy Butler.
Badly.
Badly. I mean, you gave me a choice between the two. I'd take Jimmy Butler, but Ariza is destroying him.
I would not. Yeah. I'll say it right now. And I know there are Jimmy Butler fanatics, but look, the guy can't shoot, and maybe he'll develop a jumper, and that's awesome. He's done some good stuff on the perimeter, but the Wizards have largely figured out kind of how to neutralize him.
Yeah.
He hasn't made much of it. I haven't seen a sequence in this series outside of maybe one of the two alley-oops and maybe a few other plays where I could really go, wow, like he's made an impact. Like Taj Gibson's everywhere.
And that's the thing too, like Butler is long, he is athletic. It doesn't feel like I see him cutting to the basket a whole lot. Like, I don't know that he has that kind of awareness of when to do it. Maybe it's by design. Maybe it's, you know, he's just not that comfortable doing it. I don't know what it is, but it just feels like he should be at the rim so much more than he is.
He needs a little bit of Kawhi.
Yeah, that would be a great player for him to study and figure out how to do those things.
It's also problematic because it's hard for him to get the ball because the guy trying to pass to him is like 5'1". So
I can't stress enough how dumbfounded I was when Kirk Heinrich was about to get into a fight last night and he took off his protective eyewear.
It was amazing.
If anything, you want to tighten that puppy up.
As someone who wore goggles when I used to play.
As someone who I sold and maybe I'm a little biased here. I sold Oakley eyewear for a long time. I worked for Oakley for a couple of years, and I can tell you, like, by far, it is the safest piece of eyewear you could do. Like, we used to not have demonstrations in the store, but there are videos of, like, you can shoot a lens with a bullet. Like, you can shoot it with a gun, and it will jack up the lens, but it's not going to go through. Obviously, you know, you put a 44 next to it, but, like, 10 feet, 20 feet away, like, they had these demonstrations on video of doing it. It's all legit. It's the most protective stuff you can do. You don't want to take it off if you're about to get punched in the face.
I felt really bad for Heinrich, and I've defended him time and time again. I love him, but he is just struggling.
Like, and he's trying, he's playing his ass off, but he just doesn't have it. Like, he just, for what they need him to do, he can't physically do it.
It's also been weird that the Bulls twice have gone on these runs in the third quarter. I'm really impressed with Washington for just being like, that's fine, that's okay, like, we're just gonna keep working. Because we know you can't hit four jump shots in a row, and right. We can. Like, that was what happened. Is the Bulls stopped being able to get stuff at the rim? They started the Wizards started rebounding again, and then Bradley Beal went ballistic.
Beal was that dude is so good.
The broken play where everyone dove on the floor and they were scrambling, and Noah's like lunging full speed, arm extended. Ended and Beal just nails it cold blooded.
Yeah, that was filthy. I mean, his poise is just, and the fun thing to watch with him, it's subtle, but you could really see it if you look for it, is his body control on these jumpers in motion is Westbrook esque. Like, he gets straight up and down, he gets balanced so easily no matter where, what direction he's going or what speed. That's a fun thing to see a young guy in. And it was something where in college, like, he didn't, his percentage wasn't that good, but you looked at his 3-point shot and the form and you're like, that guy's going to be able to shoot, even though the results weren't there. And he, it doesn't matter where he is in the shot, where he is on the court, like, that shooting motion is consistent every damn time.
Yep. I felt like Wall, he had pretty much the same numbers he had in game one. I feel like Wall had a much better game, especially, I paid more attention to this. He's doing great work defensively.
Yeah, he's been a pain in the ass defensively, and I agree with you. Like, I thought he played well in game one. I know you were a little more down on him than I was, but yeah, I thought his numbers did not reflect how well he played last night.
So it's easy when a team's down 2-0 to just be like, I don't know what they're gonna do. There's nothing they can do. Like, clearly, and then they, you know, obviously do something. I thought it was interesting. Sam Smith, legendary writer, writes for Bulls.com. A classicist, you might say, of the sports writing profession.
Sure.
In terms of his approach. Wrote an article before yesterday's game saying, and this was actually, he referenced something which no one would get, but adjustments, we don't need no stinking adjustments. And it was all about how the Bulls weren't going to make any sort of strategic adjustments. They were just that Tibbs just said, well, we just need to try harder, and everyone said, well, we just need to play harder. I'm gonna go ahead and go on a limb here, guys. Effort's not really the problem with you guys. You guys try fine. Right. Trying's not really the issue there. And I've wrote about this, and yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and be that guy. Look, I wrote about this in March. I said they don't have an extra gear. They play the same way every time. Balls out. They play as hard as they can every single time. That's great for the regular season. In the playoffs, teams find an extra gear and the Bulls don't have one. Effort is not going to get them this. They're going to have to find some way to manufacture points, and I have no idea how.
Oh, I've got an idea.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Unleash the Jimmer. I know, like, I'm not kidding on this. Jimmer Fredette.
All right, do you play him instead of Augustine, or do you play him with him?
I play him with him.
And you go small ball.
And I mean, you've got the, you put him with Taj, you put him with Butler, you put him with Noah. You're going to have rim protection for when those guys get destroyed off the dribble, and they're going to get destroyed against the Wizards. But this is, I mean, you need offense. Like, I know their defense hasn't been good, but especially, you know, not in the first two games, but like, you need offense. That is the problem, is you cannot get enough offense to get over these Wizards. And you have, you know, Augustine shot well, and he's shot well with the Bulls, but you put him next to Jimmer, those are two guys who can shoot the hell out of the ball right now, and I just, like, no offense to Kirk Heinrich, but I don't want him taking shots. I don't want him initiating offense right now. I want him playing defense. I want him making an extra pass. You know, he's done a pretty good job for what he can do, but he can't do what they need him to do. And I mean, I'm telling you, like, Jimmer can score. He's a joke everywhere else, but dude can score, and you need scoring.
Mid-second quarter, maybe early fourth, I would try this one. I would go Augustine, Jimmer, Heinrich, Butler, Noah.
Yeah, I'd do that.
And the response is going to be, but Nene will kill Butler. One, Butler's really strong. Two, refs, Nene's temptation is going to be to take him in the post. Refs are more likely to call a charge on big players posting up small ones than they are on big players posting up big ones. There's a high probability that Butler just flops there. He gets the call if Nene tries to go inside.
And flop.
You got Nene in foul trouble.
And flop, and then, flop a couple of times. Try to draw that foul. Like, there, you know, I know that's shameful and all that crap, but you're trying to win games.
Yeah. And then on the other side, just run. And if you're scoring in transition, that gives you more time to get back defensively. And you can get away with it because really you're not worried about either of the wings taking Heinrich off the dribble. You're not worried about Ariza and you're not worried about Webster. Ariza can post up Heinrich and that could be problematic, but I don't see the Wizards doing it all the way down. Now, your bigger issue is probably going to be that Wall might be tempted to put Augustine in the post. That might be problematic for you.
Yeah.
But your help defense is so good, I think you can get away with it, right?
Yeah, I agree with that, and I think that you know, I'm not advocating for Jimmer to play 30 minutes here. I'm saying like 15 to 18, but he's got to get on the court. And I like that idea. Like you have to make the Wizards uncomfortable because they have you completely uncomfortable. You got to flip that.
Yeah, it's really weird to say, but they actually need to play faster.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I wrote this in the Court Vision post last night, and I want to know what you think about it. Carlos Boozer is the best scorer on that team, right? Am I wrong in thinking that? And he doesn't play, and I get why he doesn't play. I'm not saying you need to throw him out there for 40 minutes. I'd rather have Taj out there too, but there is a certain point where maybe early, like, you've got to go heavy Boozer until Taj comes in and puts his mark on the game. I would just go Boozer. I would try to wear Nene out. I would try to get him into foul trouble. Like, Boozer is your best scorer, and that's scary to say.
I guess here's the thing. Is there any reason for them to be afraid of Marcin Gortat?
No.
Given what they've done to him mentally in this series?
No, not at all.
So why not play Boozer and Taj together? I know Joakim Noah is a DPOY. I know that he's the heart of that team. Let's roll out one where Boozer's basically playing Tim Duncan and Taj Gibson's playing Fabrizio Oberto, and he's going to just clean up everything offensively, which is what Gibson does anyway. And that way you have the best of both worlds. You've got legitimate scoring from turnarounds and from mid-range. He can face up and get some room for him. Boozer's a gifted passer. He can hit Butler on the cut and whatever else. And then I'm not worried about Gortat taking Gibson in the post. If you get beat by Marcin Gortat, well, you got beat by everybody else. It was time to try something different.
Right, and that's the thing. Like you talked about earlier, like you're a little worried about maybe Trevor Ariza taking who, Heinrich in the post. Like if that's how the Wizards want to win, by all means, run that 20 times. Like if you want to try to score with Gortat going against Gibson or going against Boozer, like go ahead, disrupt your game. Don't do what you're good at and go to that matchup. Like I really believe there is a mental aspect of if you're gonna beat us, you're gonna beat us with something you're not comfortable doing.
I'd bring up something, and this will kind of transition us to the other game. So Noah, about four times last night, like he gets a foul called on him and is screaming, jumping up and down, top of his lungs, waving his arms, yelling, "No!" and like being unbelievably like expressive. If you buy into the it's an emotional game, players shouldn't get called for it, that's fine. I can buy into that. Here's my problem. I'm watching the Raptors Brooklyn replay that I recorded last night right now. And KG got called for making one comment and then putting his arms up walking back off the court. He got teed up for that. Now, I'm sure Kevin Garnett said something which was probably inappropriate in every country and probably illegal in several countries. Nonetheless, I have a hard time when guys are getting teed up for almost nothing and Noah is flipping his ish on the sideline and getting away with it because, again, hustle, heart, hustle.
Well, like, especially in a game where Joey Crawford is officiating. It's kind of shocking that he didn't get. I was expecting him to get teed up a lot. I was expecting Gibson to get teed up.
But yeah, no, like, and they let him play. I think they officiated the game pretty well. Some of the things where I started complaining in the third and fourth because it was just like, it felt like I get upset when there's unevenness, when, all right, interior contact is allowed on one end, and on the other end you're getting touch fouls. I'm like, no, let's get it consistent. But I'm not down there. I can see it. I can understand it fine. But yeah, I just don't understand the whole. Like, I don't mind if you tee guys up. I think I like, from an idea, just from a conceptual standpoint, I like, don't show up the officials as something to say to players. I like that concept.
Sure.
But if you're going to do it, like, you're going to need to actually mandate this across the board.
I think that, the call last night, the Nene foul was awful. But we got to remember that he gave a hug to Taj Gibson and got a jump ball out of it, and then grabbed Taj Gibson's arm on the jump ball and got away with it. Like, yeah, he got screwed on that last foul, but he also kind of got away with some stuff.
There were some fun miscalls, like the I'm trying to remember who it was. Beal slips on a wet spot, gets tackled, the ball comes loose, he reaches to get it and gets a foul call on it.
That was amazing.
What are you doing? Like, he slipped on a wet spot. Like, stop the play, clean up the wet spot, and let's go on. Like, what are you doing?
Right.
I wrote nice things about the Raptors last night because I thought it was a nice win for them, and it was great to see DeRozan.
Yeah, I really enjoyed your piece. I agree with your take on it.
Brooklyn could have won this game.
Oh yes.
Like, Pierce missed two looks, which are nearly automatic, and. Yeah, I don't have a lot. I mean, part of – I keep going back and forth because I'm like, I'm not scared about playing in Brooklyn. You know, it's like, oh, man, you can really get rattled by the artificial crowd noise. I mean, like, it's just not
– Granted, I went in January and it was a Magic Nets game. But that is, I mean, I guess you could get freaked out by the atmosphere in there because it's so quiet. Like, it's almost too quiet that you're worried, like, you're going to, like – like, you're going to say, you're going to, talk trash to somebody, and it's going to be so quiet that everyone hears you, and then you've said something awful that everyone's heard, and they're just going to be like, wow, what is wrong with you? And then you feel shame. Like, that could get into your head, I guess. Clearly, it's not a problem for KG. But that, yeah, I wouldn't be worried about going to Brooklyn at all. And that's not to say, like, I don't think the crowd will be good at some points. It's just, you're not going to Oklahoma City. You're not going to Toronto. You're not going to Portland. You're not going to Golden State. Like, it's a different vibe.
Yeah. DeRozan was great.
Oh my God. He was big shot after big shot. He had that emphatic dunk. What did he have, like 17 in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, the switch-handed lefty dunk.
Oh, woo! Yeah.
Lowry made plays. Amir Johnson was alive. That was nice to see. I feel like Mason Plumlee, like, I buy into the single game plus minus a little bit more than most people do because I understand it's conflated by a lot of things, but for guys that impact plus minus a lot, when their plus minus is bad, that's when I start to be like, huh. But I feel like Miles Plumlee was very unrepresentative of how he played. I felt like he was great. He made a lot of good things happen for the Nets.
Yeah, I thought his defense was exceptional.
I liked Casey's move. I was talking about this morning on Twitter. They started running a ton of side pick and rolls, putting Mirza Teletovic in, basically forcing him to make decisions, and that was really working out well for them.
Yep. Absolutely.
Patterson spreads the floor really well for that team.
I'm shocked that Steve Novak doesn't play more for this team because I do think he's a weapon that you can use, especially against this Nets defense. But I liked shortening the rotation. I like no Tyler Hansbrough out there. Like Patterson should have all of his minutes. They should retroactively assign his minutes to Patrick Patterson.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, Hansbrough's scrappy. I don't know. Hansbrough's ability to stay on the floor, although he didn't play last night.
Yeah, I like that. I don't want him on the court at all.
I'm not really sure what to do with the fact that Landry Fields was effective against Joe Johnson. Because I was like, this isn't going to work. I was like, why is he out there? And then the Raptors writers were like, he's been really good on Joe Johnson for like the last 5 minutes. And I was like, okay, sure. And then he knocked the ball away from him and shut him down twice. And I was like,
I mean,
I do not understand what's happening.
It kind of makes sense. Like, we talked about that after the first game. Joe Johnson's just so much bigger than his matchups. Fields is kind of a sneaky big guy.
He is. That's true.
And Joe doesn't really have that size advantage. Now, he's got a quickness advantage against him, but if Fields, you know, reads the body motion and the direction of the hips and all that stuff, if he can anticipate, not to say that Joe Johnson still doesn't have an advantage, but you can take a lot of that stuff away.
Here's a fun one. So Lowry and Vasquez combined for 25 points, 12 rebounds, and 14 assists.
Yes.
And then you start to realize that's basically a monster LeBron game. Like, that kind of puts it into perspective. Because if I told you that LeBron had 27, 12, and 14, you'd be like, wow. But you'd still be like, I'm not completely surprised.
Right. I've seen that before.
Yeah. Valanciunas' plus-minus is bad, but I feel like he's still – I mean, he had five offensive rebounds last night.
He's been able to control the boards in the first two games.
You know, 19-11 offensive rebound advantage.
I think he's got 32 rebounds in the first two games.
That seems like a lot.
That's not bad. It's better than eight.
So Vasquez has played really well, and then like they got everybody to kind of play well last night except Terrence Ross. Like, he was the only guy that kind of struggled.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I guess they can. I just get worried by the fact that I think Brooklyn. There's a chance Brooklyn's too confident, right? That they think they're like, oh no, this is fine, we got this. But there's also. They really do seem to act like Brooklyn's entire body language is, well, this is fine, but like, we're gonna win the series.
Yeah, I mean, they have so much experience, and Pierce. I mean, Pierce called them soft, or said they played soft last night, and you know, he did miss. Though, I mean, the two big misses he had, I was sure were going in.
Because so Knicks fans who then reacted on Twitter as if they had won the title. Which was incredible. Like, I'm not mocking them. Like, it's actually awesome.
There's a weird dynamic going in the Atlantic Division right now.
Yeah, because it's like they really want Brooklyn to lose. Yeah. Okay, you want to do games tonight?
Yeah, let's do games.
All right. So, the Bobcats, Al's going to play. We'll see what he does.
Oh, God. I just wish he was healthy.
Me too. It's up to 10.5. It was 10 early. It's up to 10.5 for the Heat.
I think Miami handles them.
I just it sucks because I really want Charlotte to get the one to kind of reward them for everything they've done this year, but I just don't think that they're gonna.
I think if Al is maybe can be rested enough for game three, I think they could, you know, ride that crazy Bobcats crowd. And you know, I think they could maybe steal one if the Heat aren't totally focused. But I also think the Heat really want to get rest, right?
You know, you say that. I actually think the Bobcats crowd is actually pretty good. I was impressed throughout the season that
it got pretty loud.
I think that after Bob Johnson sold the team, they're kind of like, okay,
yeah,
all right,
yeah, this is an actual like sports franchise. Like we can get into. I mean, it's not the Hawks. I just don't think I don't think anyone's going to be nervous from playing there.
It's not okay. Yeah, it's not OKC or Portland.
Right.
They just don't have enough weapons.
I called I was talking with Aaron Cerrone on the video thing I did this morning. I called Josh McRoberts a middle management version of Chris Bosh. Do you like that?
Yeah, that's good. I like that because he's not a poor man. Yeah.
He's not a poor man, but he's not rich. He's not affluent at all, but he's like middle management.
That's good. I like that. Now I'm going to have to Photoshop him into Office Space. Josh, next time he dunks, I'm just going to tweet, Josh McRoberts wants his red stapler. The Spurs open at 8.5. It's down to 7.5.
Oh.
Which seems high to me after game one, but it's the Spurs.
Yeah, and also the Spurs did not play their style of basketball. You got to think that if they get into that mode, if they can break out of like the things Carlisle was willing to give them, takes them out of that extra pass, move it around the perimeter, hit threes kind of look. If they can break out of that and play their game, they should blow them out. And that's no offense to the Mavericks. Like, it's just, that's a bad matchup for that defense. I'll go with the Spurs. I don't think this game is close. I still think the Mavericks will take one game in the series, but I don't think it's this game.
We'll have to see whether game one was indicative of how the Mavericks are going to play, and especially how the Spurs bench is going to play, or whether it was an outlier. That, to me, is the driving question. I like the idea conceptually of, you know what? Let's let the big three do whatever. Like, Duncan's not going to score 40 anymore. He's not that guy. Parker's not going to score 40. He's going to score 30.
Yeah.
But we could actually live with – we can realistically live with 70 points from Tony Parker and Tim Duncan. If we can keep Ginobili under 30 and really hurt everybody else, we might have a decent chance here. I wrote that in the preview today. The difference in bench scoring in game one was 23 points.
Devin Harris. Average
plus 23.
Yeah, Devin Harris had a great game off the bench. And he's really the only guy that's hurt the Spurs this season in the regular season.
And outside of Manu, nobody else, you know, like Bellinelli didn't do anything. Patty Mills didn't do anything.
Yeah.
I think the real killer for the Mavericks, I really think, is Thiago Splitter. I think he played really well in that first game, and he's going to have matchup advantages because D'Alembert is too slow to keep on the court, and he hurts them on both ends with his lack of speed. DeJuan Blair is actually a player named DeJuan Blair, and
he's still himself.
Yeah, and Brandon Wright's too small to defend Splitter. So
yeah.
So now you've got this really kind of complicated set of things that you have to weigh. I still like going with Wright. I want to see Jay Crowder play more. I know Mavs fans hate him. I want to see Jay Crowder play more.
He seems like he's not Devin Harris, but what I mean by that is just like, dude's going to bring energy, and you kind of need that. You know, you need that off the bench. And I agree. I would like him to play more.
I think Calderon played less than 20 last game. How many minutes do you think Calderon should play in this game?
I think he should be playing 25 minutes. I know he sucks on defense, but I really think like you got to the playoffs by playing a specific style of basketball, and it involved outside shooting, spreading the floor, and he does that. You know, like, yeah, he's going to get killed by Tony Parker, but if he's hitting 4 or 5 threes a game for you, like, he can just provide so much spacing and give Dirk room to operate, and Dirk didn't really have room to operate in that game. I mean, Dirk was bad because they just took away a lot of what he wanted to do, and he wasn't strong enough, or, you know, wasn't healthy enough, or whatever it was, and Calderon gives him that space.
I think it's tough just because you're tempted to go to that kind of approach, but Carlisle found the answer in defense in that first game.
Absolutely, yeah, that's a good point.
Somehow, that strategy worked for them, and if you're going to go defense first, Jose Calderon's got to be last.
Sure.
I think, and it's tough because you can't hide him. That, I think, is the real problem, is Danny Green is good enough in pick-and-roll situations, you can't even hide Calderon. If it was just a shooter, you could hide Calderon, but you can't. Like Kawhi, you can't hide him on Kawhi. You can't hide him on Danny Green. You can't hide him on Mills. You can't hide him anywhere against the Spurs. And I think that's the issue. Like everyone, like, you know, Vince Carter's been playing great defense.
Yes.
And when they've got Harris and Carter on the floor, that's two good defenders. Throw Marion and Dirk out there. All of a sudden, you're 1-4. Like Dirk's okay enough that you're doing okay. And I've noticed this with the Mavericks. When one guy springs a leak, the whole thing goes down.
Yeah, I do think that part of me wants to say, like, all right, run pick and rolls with Danny Green all day. You know, I don't disagree with your assessment earlier of, you know, let the big three do what they do and try to take away everything else. I think that's a solid strategy. It's a strategy that I advocated for against the Stan Van Gundy Orlando Magic of let Dwight eat and take away the shooters. But part of me, like, you really want to run your offense through Danny Green? Yeah, I'd live with that. Even if it's Calderon defending him. Just for stretches, I would say go ahead and do that.
If the Spurs play with just basically more motion, if they just get in that zone where they're just whipping the ball around, the Mavericks aren't going to have a chance anyway.
Right. It does seem like Jose Calderon would get easily motion sick on a ball. Like just sway back and forth three times, and he would just, all right, I got to sit down.
They're gonna, and the other thing is that the Mavericks are going to win. Dirk's going to have to, 35 plus, he's going to have to
score. Yeah, he's just got to be big.
This one's interesting. It opened at 6.5. It's down to 5.5. Rockets 5.5 versus Portland.
That's a lot of points.
You think that's a lot? I don't think it's enough. A pissed off Houston squad that should have won the first game at home facing an 0-2 deficit?
I don't think this Portland team cares. You got two guys with Aldridge and Lillard who just feasted. And I just don't know how healthy Beverly is can you play him 38 minutes again? Is he going to be capable of doing that? I don't know. I don't know how they have that matchup at point guard. And I think that, I just think all these games are going to be down to the wire. And you can get to that 5.5 by, you know, free throws and stuff in a close game. But to me, I think, not that these games are pick-ems, but anything over 2.5, 3.5 points, I think is a lot of points.
If Portland wins these first two, that's going to get tense with Houston. I'm not sure. I wrote about this yesterday. Dwight came out and said, I need the ball in the post, and I need to go to work.
No, you don't, Dwight. No, you don't. Get in the goddamn pick and roll and destroy the rim.
And Zach Lowe sent me over the synergy numbers for against Portland, and he in the regular season, Dwight shot 60%, like a 1.2 points per possession. I looked up the specifics of it, how it kind of broke down, and basically he had one game where he hit a 1.38 points in the post, one game where he hit like a 1.2, then he had a 1.07 and a 0.97. So it was all over the board.
Yeah.
His highest one was a 1.38 versus Portland in the game they lost, which I thought was interesting.
That is interesting. I mean, meanwhile, you're a team that feasts on motion and three-point shots and attacking and stuff. Like, why would you want to bog it down?
Like, even if you want to say, like, well, you know, we really want to overwhelm them. Overwhelm them in the pick and roll. He's taller than everyone.
And he can jump. Yeah. Like, how good – like, throw a lob to him. We used to have so many lobs, and maybe that's the back injury or he's getting older or whatever, but he used to have so many pick-and-roll lobs with that guy in Orlando.
Like, Harden should be – they should be murdering them with a Harden-Howard pick-and-roll.
Oh,
they should
my
be
God.
Murdering them.
I do think, like, if you get a cross-switch and you have Aldridge on Dwight, go at him. Put in the post and go at him. Like, I think you need to make Aldridge play as much defense as possible. But other than that, like, pick-and-roll, pick-and-roll, pick-and-roll.
Baffling how he continues to think he's a player he's not, but.
And I mean, you got to wonder how much of that pressure is Shaq induced. That's a very popular man, good or bad. That guy is a high profile legend of the game, highly critical at all times of Dwight Howard. You know that's got to feed into it.
I think Shaq feeds into it. I think it's widespread though. I think everyone says the same thing, which Certainly. Is like he's not a great center, and I just kind of want to be like. Man, if you score 40 points and win a title, like if you score 40 points and win Finals MVP, and like in one game, and you average 24 for the series, you will be considered a great center. Like that is it.
Right.
You will have a championship ring. You will have been the best center in the league for a prolonged stretch of time, and you will have a Finals MVP with a monster performance, with several monster playoff performances.
Yeah.
Like this is not that difficult a thing to look at. Related to that, actually, this is a side question. Pete Prisco and Matt Norlander were on Rome yesterday, and Rome asked them about – on CBS Sportsnet, you can check your local listings – asked them about whether or not Durant's shot will be remembered, the four-pointer the other night.
Oh. I would say no.
That's what Prisco said. And Norlander said yes, and I agree with him, and here's why. Do you remember the LeBron shot versus the Magic?
Oh, yeah.
That's what to me it's similar to. It's these unbelievable shots that will because of the iconic scene that it sets, even though you forget, like, oh yeah, they lost.
Didn't they win that game? LeBron hit the shot?
Yeah, they lost the series.
Yeah. I think had the Thunder won that game, absolutely.
Okay.
Even if
they lost the series but won that game, it would be remembered. But you have to win the game in which the shot was taken.
Yes.
In most instances.
I would say so. I mean, obviously it depends on the shot, but I think that had they won that game, then boom, that's a moment.
Like Amir Johnson hit a reverse layup last night over his head. I'm never going to forget that. Doesn't matter what happened in that game.
Right.
By the way, Beverly had a 106 defensive rating on court. Okay, so here's the on-off. With Beverly on the court in game one, 106 defensive rating. With him off court, it was 127.8.
Jesus Christ.
In 15 minutes.
And 106 is not good.
No. But all the rest of them were in the 110s. Like Harden predictably was the highest at 117.4.
I wonder what it was before that final push in the fourth quarter. That would be interesting to know because, you know, a lot of damage happened in those last 5 minutes of regulation.
I can look at first half. I can't do through third. But
yeah.
Through in the first half, it was 101.4.
much more indicative. Because I think on the season they were like in the like a 102.7.6, something like that.
And somewhere then, in that range. And then Jeremy Lin in 12 minutes in the first half had a 73.5 defensive rating.
Ooh.
And then and in the second half, that means in the second half, hold on, I gotta look at this.
Oh god, I can't even imagine.
I know this is just staffed up people, but you gotta bear with me. These are amazing. Like, this is about, this is, we're going for the payoff. It's getting there. Second half. Yeah, second half, Jeremy Lin had a 125.9 defensive rating.
That's a pretty good IQ for some people. Wouldn't want that as a defensive rating.
James Harden, 124 in the second half. Terrence Jones, 122 in the second half in 15 minutes. The lowest was, again, Beverly at 101. Second half, Beverly was only at 101.7.
Ah.
Jeez. Dwight was at 109.5. Oof. Yeah, they got to defend better. And I that may be, if they lose, especially if they lose the series, I'm not sure McHale keeps his job if they lose the series.
Probably not. Yeah, I would agree with that.
I don't necessarily think it's about what he did or did not do. I think that, that Morey would just have to be like, we got to get more.
Yeah, like they have a directional thing way they're going, right? And Kevin McHale may or may not fit that, fair or unfair. I don't think he's such a great coach where it's an injustice. I also don't think it's such a bad coach where you need to make the move. It's there is a little bit of a weird fit there.
Who's the leading scorer tonight?
All games. James Harden.
I'll take LeBron.
That's probably a safe bet.
I'll go out on a limb. Hot sports take this one up with my choice of LeBron James for the best player. And then it'll wind up being like, oh god, like Splitter. It'll be like Splitter will have like a 35.
Yeah. Game. Nobody saw that 50-point Splitter game coming.
And Spurs fans will break down my door and carry me out.
It's okay. I can talk to your head on a stick tomorrow.
Exactly. Thanks, Zach.
Thanks, Matt.